welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David?
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm exhausted from all celebrating.
Absolutely. That's an odd way of saying it, but yeah.
We had celebrations.
Yeah, sure.
We were celebrating.
I prefer celebrations. Uh-huh. Right? That's how you say it? Yeah, it's we recorded five episodes. For those that don't know, for those that tuned in at the usual day and then tuned out, we recorded five episodes for episode 500.
Yeah.
And so you can find those at BattleshipRetention.com.
And we got a lot of great responses on the website and on Twitter and I'm assuming on Facebook. I don't know.
Yes.
But people were really into us doing five episodes a week. It's not going to be an ongoing thing.
Yeah, that's... I tell you what, when we get to episode 1,000... Oh, wow. When we get to episode 1,000, we'll do 10 episodes.
Did you see the tweet we got today that someone tweeted, congratulations on 500 episodes. Here's to five more.
Yeah.
And the talk was like, 500. Yeah. I laughed really hard about that this morning.
I do like the idea. It's just like 505 is pretty much where I tune out.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're going to keep the celebrations going a little
bit. Oh, good.
Because we have some gifts. This one, I always feel weird about opening because Sarah is, of course, a member of the BP family, but she also sends us awesome stuff.
That's true, yes.
Because she's very crafty.
Yeah.
Like
sneaky?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like MacGyver, though.
Yeah.
Gosh. Sarah Brinks, the great Battleship Retention contributor, made us a card where she made 500 out of, what are these, little rolls of... I don't know. Little paper rolls?
Yeah, I think so.
It's and very it looks cool wonderful. To look at. So maybe I'll take a picture of that and put it up on the Twitter.
Good call.
So she said, yeah, she says a bunch of nice stuff, which I'm too embarrassed to read. I'm handing it to Tyler. But then we also got something I'm very excited about.
Okay. Oh my gosh, this is a big package here.
Yeah, I'm very excited whenever we get anything from Canada.
Oh, time for you to get some things you can eat that I can't.
Yeah, because if you don't know by now, if you're in Canada or Australia or New Zealand, I want all of your treats.
Mm-hmm.
The candy bars and stuff that they have in those parts of the world.
Yeah.
For some reason, they really speak to me, and I'm running low on Cherry Ripes from our last...
Oh, wow, you really tore through those.
No, it's been a while.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess so.
I've been making them last, the Cherry Ripes from Australia, so I'm hoping there's something cool from Canada in this bag. Oh, and I am not at all disappointed. Hopefully there's a card in here somewhere. But we got a bunch of Coffee Crisp. Like a bunch of Coffee Crisp. And you got a Devil's Backbone DVD, because our listeners can't stop making you want to, like, making sure you see the Devil's Backbone. We also got a comic book, a hardcover comic book called Black Sad Amarillo.
Okay.
And oh, here's the card. Okay.
There we go.
I was hoping that there's more Coffee Crisp in this
bag. Good. All right.
All right.
Well, our guest wanted some snacks, and we have some now.
Yes. So our guest can have some of... Here, you can have some of that Coffee Crisp. I'm taking the rest of this home.
I might enjoy the occasional Coffee Crisp.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? You're right. I just made the assumption that you would not care for Coffee Crisp.
I enjoy crispy things and coffee.
And coffee. Okay. So Jared says, dear David, I hope you like... Oh, I see. He's given us the... All right, we each have our own card. We don't have to read them out loud, but they have...
This guy again. Okay.
Yeah, it's Jarrett, and he gave us drawings. Here's a very muscular man holding cake and party favors, and he's chasing a woman with a bare midriff. He's blowing a... What do you call these things? Like a noisemaker?
Yeah, I think
he's
so.
Tooting a noisemaker,
mm-hmm.
and she finds it delightful. So that's the drawing he gave, and then here's the man and woman again. This is my 34th birthday thing. I see.
Indeed, yes.
Thank you, Jared.
I have what looks like a knight in shining armor and a worried samurai.
Uh huh.
So
it's a lady knight, right?
Now
in shining armor,
or just a man with long hair, you know?
I guess I was thinking because mine was a man and a woman. And also because this is me being sexist, your knight's shining armor is magenta.
Yeah. What's wrong with magenta?
You're right. You know what? I think I look good in magenta.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's no question that you do.
I'm wearing like periwinkle pants today, so I shouldn't be judging about people's colors.
I do like that. Not necessarily the color, but like the name of that color. So I'm not going to read the letter, but I will read the PS. It says, wait till Christmas and see what you get.
Oh, I also got to wait until Christmas. Mine wasn't quite so threatening.
Yeah.
So thank you, Jared. You know what? If you guys keep sending us stuff, our 500th episode celebration never has to end.
That's true.
So just keep sending stuff. You can find the PO box on the website.
Lots of great stuff on the Criterion Collection right
now.
Thank
you so much. Yeah, and there's always coffee crisps and Tim Tams and and Jerry Ripes.
And even though
anything else that you want,
even though you can buy Tim Tam at Target now,
yeah,
I don't want to have to leave the house to get Tim Tam. I like them to come to my P.O. box.
It's not the same if they don't come from halfway around the world. All right. Let's pay some bills, and then we'll introduce our guest.
Indeed. All right. David, as you know, this episode 501, is brought to you by Mubi, a curated online cinema that brings its members a hand-picked selection of the best independent, international, and classic films. Every day, Mubi's curators introduce a new title, and you have 30 days to watch it. That means there's always 30 wonderful films to enjoy, all for only $5.99 a month. Plus, when you use their mobile apps, you can download films to watch offline. All right, currently available at Mubi is The Innkeepers, featuring a friend of the show, Pat Healy, who is on episode 500B, correct?
I don't remember.
That sounds correct to me. Also available is, okay, here we go. This is a movie's branching out. YK Kim's Miami Connection, a delightfully over-the-top B-movie that features brutal martial arts and songs about friendship. That's actually true. The people that cut the arms off of their enemies also sing songs about friendship. It is a crazy ass movie, and it is available at Mubi right now. And there is a special offer for listeners of Battleship Retention. You can try Mubi free for a month. Just go to Mubi.com. That's MUBI.com/battleship to redeem now. Okay. We have another sponsor this week only. BP listeners may recall back in fall of 2014, we were sponsored by a Kickstarter campaign raising money for a tiny horror comedy, an homage to 1950s monster movies called I Was a Teenage Were-Skunk. Well, here we are two years later, and this little movie that could, this is their copy, I think it's fine. That's a joke, of course. David and I saw the movie, and we love it. We think it's hilarious.
You still have to pay for a sponsorship, though.
Yeah, exactly. I cut him a deal.
Okay.
But, you know, so the movie is finally completed and is about to be unleashed upon the world. I Was a Teenage Were-Skunk tells the story of all-American teen Curtis Albright. One night while Curtis is peeping on a neighbor woman undressing for bed, he's sprayed in the face by an enchanted skunk. I'm remembering this movie already and I'm laughing again. Okay. From that point forward, anytime Curtis feels turned on, he transforms into a murderous were-skunk. Suffice to say, hilarity and horror ensues. Fresh off a wildly successful Hollywood premiere in front of a raucous, sold-out audience at the historic Vista Theater. Would you say we were raucous, David?
We were rocking.
Damn right we were. Were-Skunk is now officially released. So a couple options here. If you live in L.A., you can catch it on the big screen at the Los Feliz 3 Theater on Vermont Avenue for the week of October 28th to November 3rd. So
right in time for Halloween.
Just in time for Halloween. I know what you, the listener, are thinking. I don't live in Los Angeles. I'm some kind of flyover cow, you know?
Uh-huh. Or I live in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and I'm too busy packing up chocolate treats for David.
Yeah, my mouth is too full of cherry ripes to say one, please. But fear not, also on October 28th, you can catch the Were-Skunk exclusively on Amazon in the form of DVD, digital download, or streaming rental. And it's free to Amazon Prime members. I'm very excited for that. So visit teenagewereskunk.com or click on the ad at battleshippretension.com for all the details.
And we really do think it's a good movie.
I genuinely, because we went to see it, he invited us, and you know, invariably when you see like a friend's film or something like that, you're like, all right, I'm going to cut this thing some slack.
Yeah. And
no slack required.
Yeah. It's a parody of 1950s teen monster horror movies.
Yeah.
That is, I think, smart in the way that it, hits on the way that they're really all just about sexual repression.
Yes.
And it's also really funny in the style of a Wet Hot American Summer, in the sense that it's parodying a certain type of movie, but also just has a bunch of crazy shit in it a lot of the time. That's really, really funny.
Yeah. I'm going to say everyone's great. All three cops have just a delightful dynamic that cannot be explained with human words.
Yeah. The three cops, the best characters are the three cops. And then the dynamic between the sheriff, who's one of the cops, and his wife.
Yes.
The actress, by the way, who plays his wife, also plays one of the three cops.
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. Definitely worth checking out, especially if you're an Amazon Prime member.
I mean, exactly. I have Amazon Prime, and I'm like, hey, I can watch this whenever I want. That's fun.
All right. I also want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. That's where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors, and they look great. They sound great. And they're all available at a low, low price over at tweakedaudio.com. And if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tyler.
Yes?
Who's our guest? And was he just taking a picture of me?
No. I swear to God, no.
No, I was not. Should I have?
No, I didn't know if I should be posing or whatever.
No, I don't like the natural photos. I've been taking pictures of you for a long time.
All right, now when we did our sound check, you were not swallowing the mic. So
sorry. I'll back off on the mic. My name's Asterios Kokonos. You might remember me from episode 300 of Battleship Pretension. Now I'm here on 501. Every 200 episodes, I will reappear like the Phoenix or Shangri-La. Welcome to me.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. I think this might be the first time that a guest has said his name before.
That's true. It is deeply off-putting.
Yeah.
I don't like it one bit.
My first question out of the gate is, had you had Coffee Crisp before? And if not, what do you think?
It's amazing.
Yeah, they're fantastic, right?
How much caffeine is in this? Let me see. Caffeine.
No, I guess it's just like coffee flavoring then. Because there's no caffeine on there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that.
No, you're right. There's a lot of, there's a lot. Oh, I just ate entirely chemicals. gum arabic, shellac, palm kernel oil, sunflower lectin. Really good. They're delicious, though.
Yeah, I'm going to have another one.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm really very glad that Tyler likes them.
Whichever fan of yours sent these, I would love it if you'd also become a fan of mine. This is really great.
This is Jarrett from Calgary.
Jarrett, love you.
So, Asterios, how you been?
I've been doing all right. I mean, it's so funny. Something I was thinking about on the way up here is how I think I've been on the show 3 times. But over the course of there have been big gaps between them.
Uh-huh.
And in my 3 appearances on this show, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has grown from this like tiny thing to this gigantic thing. Like, I think the last time I was here, we were talking about Iron Man 2. And I was like, oh, Iron Man 2, it's not bad. I liked it.
Last time you were here, we were talking about Man of Steel.
Uh-huh.
And, I guess that was a while ago.
Yep.
That was 4 years ago, right?
It was.
Yeah, I think we were talking about Man of Steel, and then because Will Anderson was on, and he was a big Nolan Batman fan, we were also talking about Dark Knight Rises, which had come out quite a time, quite a while before then. I thought there was a year.
They're both the same year.
I thought Man of Steel was 2013.
You know what? You're right.
Okay.
I remember we were talking about Man of Steel because I said to myself, like, yeah, I don't want to see this movie. I hear Superman murders a bunch of people.
Yeah, he does.
And then I finally saw Batman versus Superman About a week ago on an airplane.
How did that work out?
On an airplane? Great. Because your expectations are so low. And also, here's the thing about Batman versus Superman. I highly suggest you watch it without headphones in and subtitles. Because you can tell everything that's happening in this movie from just people's giant expressions. It's like...
Well, so to me, that's actually... praise
for yeah, show don't
Zack
tell.
Snyder. If you can tell what's going on in a movie without listening to it, then that means that he's doing his job as a visual storyteller.
Yeah,
I still haven't seen
to a movie. Certain extent.
Yeah,
you know, like if you have that thing, if you have dialogue that goes with it, then the big expressions means that everything is so over the top it's virtually unacceptable.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, the dialogue in this movie is completely unnecessary because, like, yeah, look, I'm sure I would have gleaned more complexities if I knew that senator was drinking a jar of Lex Luthor's pee-pee before the Senate exploded from Lex Luthor turning a guy's wheelchair into a bomb. But did I really?
I don't know if any of what you're saying is made up.
Everything I just said is true. I found out about all of it later. Does he make like Amy Adams drink a jar of pee-pee?
It's not Amy. No, it's Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter. Holly Hunter! What did she ever do to anybody?
Except be a cherished cinematic treasure for 20-something years.
Which means that she's, I would say, cherished Hollywood treasure. The role that she plays in this movie, the unfortunate role she plays in this movie, which is like this senator who opposes Lex Luthor, winds up drinking some of his pee. I don't know if she actually does drink it.
But she definitely smells it because she's like... Ew. Because, yeah. Okay, so for those of you who don't remember this stupid thing we're talking about, there's an earlier scene where Holly Hunter's character goes like, don't serve me, don't pee in my teacup like Mr. Luther. Don't serve me pee-pee and call it Grammy Sweet Time Tea.
Something like that.
Like, literally, somebody call it Grammy Sweet Time Tea. So she sits down... She sits down in the Senate and she's like, order, order. We're about to rule on Superman being bad. And you think like Lex Luthor wants that. And then she like looks over to her right and there's a jar and like there's a piece of masking tape on it. And someone has written in a Sharpie, Grammy's Sweet Time Tea. And she looks at it and she's like, what in carnation? And she opened it. And she doesn't say that, but I'm watching it. And just based on her expression, she's saying what in carnation. And so she unscrews the lid, she smelt it, she's like, ew, oh, cut to wheelchair bomb, Superman covered in the dead bodies of the entire Senate.
Yeah, that happens in the movie.
Holly Hunter dies?
Yeah, I'm sorry, she doesn't make it.
This is another reason for me not to watch the movie.
You've never seen it?
No, and I don't watch movies where Holly Hunter dies, that's not true.
You're not going to watch it on an airplane 4 years later like I did?
Maybe I'll get on an airplane and see what's going. Now I'm trying to think what movies I've seen where Holly Hunter dies.
Well,
there's kind of a Lifeless Ordinary, but she's an angel, so I don't think it really counts.
Louise, she drives off a cliff.
She's not in that.
She should have been.
It's written in Gina Davis. They did a great job without Holly Hunter's help.
Okay, Holly Hunter. Her romantic life dies in Broadcast News.
Well, I was going to say, at the end of Broadcast News, there is that scene where Albert Brooks' wheelchair explodes, which is very strange. You don't expect it, but James L. Brooks is a genius.
If Holly Hunter died in Little Black Book, I would be the only person who knew, because I think I'm the only person who saw it. She doesn't die.
Does she die in 13?
She does not die in 13.
All right. She's got a pretty good streak going, I gotta say.
She should change her name to Holly Gatherer, because she seems to be such a pacifist. She never dies in any of these movies except for one. And in that movie, she's the Holly Hunted, not the Holly Hunter.
Did you ever see A Lifeless Ordinary, by the way?
No, I don't even know what it is. Is Superman in it?
No, but Holly Hunter plays... Holly Hunter plays a very randy, sexually frustrated angel come to Earth, and that's like the fifth weirdest thing about that movie.
Whoa!
I feel like that's like a movie we Battleship Retention, I think, has talked about Lifeless Ordinary more than anyone else for the past 10 years.
Oh, that's sure. That's true. Yeah.
But I really do adore this movie.
And yet it's still probably like the sixth or seventh movie that we talk about the most.
Yeah. I feel like, okay, as far as Danny Boyle goes, I feel like A Lifeless Ordinary is to Trainspotting as burn after reading is to No Country for Old Men.
Sure.
Where people don't take those either movie as seriously because the one before it is such like it was an immediate classic.
Yeah.
And people like think, oh, whatever, they followed it up with some sort of like trifle. But A Life Less Ordinary, it's no Trainspotting, but no. It's a really, really fun movie.
Well, and I am waiting, even though it's been eight years now, but I am waiting for there to be like a little cult resurgence or surgence, I guess, for Burn After Reading. Because like, Big Lebowski was not well regarded very, very much either, right, after, yeah, Fargo, but just people found it on video, and now it's this cult classic. And I do think that'll probably happen with Burn After Reading at some point.
Okay.
Let's hope at the very least,
it might be too late for A Life Less Ordinary. That movie is almost 20 years old now.
Hey, we got,
what is it, 18 years old?
We've got five more episodes 19? To sell this thing to people.
That's right.
I guess four after this, but...
Asterios, what are some movies that you love that you think don't get enough respect?
Ant-Man,
that's a good movie.
I'm not a fan of Ant-Man myself.
I was a fan.
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, let's gang up on Tyler.
Yeah, okay. Oh, look, I'll open it up by just saying I think that is my favorite Marvel movie out of all of them. Like, I think I like it even more than Guardians, which is incredible. And I think I like it because it's just so, it's like a real underdog story, mm-hmm. You know, like Simon Pegg left the production and got replaced by another very good director.
You mean Edgar Wright left?
Yeah. Edgar Wright left the production.
Yeah. Got replaced by Peyton Reed, who's right. No slouch. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like Peyton Reed is one of the original directors of the Upright Citizens Brigade television show.
Yep.
And so it's like, well, this guy knows how to craft a joke. And it was also the first Marvel movie I ever saw that I felt was that the special effects made it better, not just the same.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Like, you know, okay, so a guy turns into the Hulk and punches somebody. Like, there's only so many ways that you can portray that, like, visually. Or, you know, a guy turns into a liquid metal. I'm trying to think of, like, the common ways you use superpowers. A guy flies. Like, a guy going from tiny to gigantic, it's like his superpower is a camera move, like a rack zoom.
Yeah.
And so it made the fights actually super entertaining and interesting. It, like, a lot of times when I see these long CGI set pieces in movies, I'm just like, well, they're doing the business of the plot, and like, this is fine. Like, I like all these actors. But with Ant-Man, I was like excited to see more CGI, especially in the final sequence where he's flowing through the quantum zone or whatever the fuck.
Oh my god! And yeah, it's like the end of 2001.
Yeah,
yeah. One of my favorites, because it's not just the CGI. A lot of this, I think, goes to Peyton Reed and the screenwriters for coming up with great visual ideas. Like the part when he's running across that model, that architecture model.
Yeah.
And someone, the cops or the security guards are shooting at him, so it's bullets, but because he's tiny, it looks like he's like storming the beaches at Normandy. Yeah. That's such an awesome idea. And Peyton Reed keeps finding interesting ways to use him being small. But also, yeah, the number, I would say, as far as Marvel movies, it's probably my second favorite after The Avengers. But you definitely hit the nail on the head. About Peyton Reed's comedy background. I think Ant-Man is the funniest Marvel movie that I've seen, which isn't many of them.
It's got the most diversity.
And
sure, they all play criminals, but come on! Like, it's so diverse!
Ant-Man would be the funniest Marvel movie if it were just for Michael Pena, but everybody else is funny too.
Yeah!
But Michael Pena,
he's great.
He knocks it out of the park. The part when he is... I talked to this before. It's such a great, like, I don't know if this is improvised by him, just a great little, like, visual bit when he's dressed up as one of the security guards, and he goes up and he stands next to the other security guard and makes a huge show of showing off his badge. You know, it's like, oh, he's got his badge on, like, the retractable lanyard thing, and he's like, shows his badge to him. I got a huge, huge laugh out of me.
So everybody at this table acknowledges that Michael Pena is, like, a brilliant comedic actor. And Hollywood does use him that way, but
it does seem like they've come around to it.
But like, is, first off, do normal moviegoers, and I don't mean to disparage them or anything like that. Like they don't have 500 movie podcast episodes under their belt. So like,
right.
So they haven't been following him since, you know, Observe and Report or whatever.
I had no idea who that guy was at all. Everyone
until
like,
that movie?
Yeah, everyone's like, that's Michael Pena. And I'm like, you keep saying that name like I'm supposed to know.
But okay, just, see, that's my question.
But he was great in the movie.
But Observe and Report is where he sort of stepped up as a comedic presence.
Cause yeah, but I'm not going to see that
he's
movie.
In like, he's in like
so dark. A
Shooter.
I'm not going to see that either.
But that's not
keep a, naming
not
Michael Payne movies I'm not going to watch.
Crash.
No!
Yeah, no, not that.
Are you kidding?
But yeah, Observe and Report, and then the second season of Eastbound and Down, I think, is where people like
again
started seeing him as super funny, and I think that's where... So yeah, I think comedy nerds, comedy filmmakers, mm-hmm. and regular movie nerds know Michael Payne and know that he's funny. Does do the... citizen to the civilians out there who yeah. aren't those things even know his name. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And you don't think so?
I don't. So therefore no one does because my experiences are everyone's experiences. And my point of view is the only one.
Oh, wow.
Have you guys heard?
I mean, admittedly, I haven't gotten any Google alerts because I do have one for Asterios Kokonos.
Yep. You better. I want to say this about, I'm sorry. Did you want to
no, say go that? Ahead. That's fine.
I want to say this about Ant-Man. Imagine how dour Civil War would have been if Ant-Man wasn't in it, too.
That I agree with you, because so I'm not actually a huge fan of Civil War. And the big fight, the three-person fight at the end, I think is great. But the big fight with everyone, I think it's like, yeah, all right, it's in a super bland environment, and it's just everybody pairs off in a way that's super obvious. Only Spider-Man and Ant-Man like add any kind of real fun and wit to it. I know it's not supposed to be fun because they're fighting their friends and all that, but at the same time, like it feels creative and vibrant when they're on screen. And you know, when Ant-Man becomes Giant Man, it's a really nice moment for comic book nerds. And I think my issue is that the character of Ant-Man as played by Paul Rudd, I think works better in an ensemble than, which is why they kind of started to build an ensemble around him in Ant-Man, but he's still definitely the lead. But I think as a supporting character, I think he works a lot better than as a lead. I find the character in the movie Ant-Man to be very inconsistent. And I feel like the comedy, while effective, doesn't fit with the larger story. I felt like it was kind of, the movie was sort of tonally in conflict with itself, despite liking a lot of the stuff. I liked all the action sequences, which is a thing I don't often say when it comes to superhero movies. Usually it's like, I like the character stuff and the action can be fun, but I usually don't care. This exactly. movie is exactly the opposite.
Wait, you couldn't relate to an ex-con who just wanted to get his daughter back?
Are we talking about Sandman and Spider-Man 3?
No, I never saw that movie either.
Oh, okay.
I heard that Peter Parker does some sort of thriller dance.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to see this movie.
You know what? Here's the thing though. I was talking with some people about this just yesterday, actually, that sequence, everyone's like, that's ridiculous. It's like the only Sam Raimi thing in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Like that is a movie that is so studio managed that there's really not much of him left except that moment where he's clearly having fun. And that's the part everybody latches onto because the movie that it's in is just so middle of the road and shitty in studio. Am I the only one who saw Spider-Man 3? Okay, all right, never mind.
Yeah, no, I did see one scene of it on a treadmill. Here's the scene I saw. I saw the perfect scene to see.
You only watch movies when you're on some sort of conveyance.
Well, look, I'm not gonna take time out of my life to watch a movie that I've been told by everyone is bad. Like, who does what kind of masochist? Like, if I'm flying somewhere, if I gotta work out, all right, put the goddamn thing on. Because again, you can. But anyway, so the one scene, yeah.
No, you know what? Say what you're seeing, then I'm going to say what my okay. thing about hate watching.
The one scene I saw is the scene that everybody points to as the worst scene in the movie, which is the Green Goblin's butler is like, I've secretly known that Peter Parker was good the whole time.
That is a shit scene.
Why haven't you told me before this? I don't know.
I think you hit on something about the only way I'm going to like hate watch something is if it's while I'm doing something else. If it's not, like, I'm not going to give all my energy, which is why I don't tend to like hate watch a lot of TV or movies. I do when it comes to music. I have a weird perverse thing where while I'm working, like just yesterday, as of recording, the new Korn album came out. It was on Spotify.
And I know. Like, here's why I know.
And I was like, I'm going to listen to the entire Korn album at work.
One of my fellow students made me very aware that the new Korn album became available because she's a big fan.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think the timing, you don't think Korn releasing an album around Halloween was an intentional move, do you?
It could be.
Pure coincidence, I have to assume.
I have to assume.
I don't tend to hate watch stuff, but I do listen to a lot of bad music on purpose. I'll listen to an entire One Republic just to be like, I got to see what this is.
And so what? Let's do this, if you'll pardon me. How would we define hate watch?
Like, I'm going into something 95% sure I'm not going to like it, but I want to consume it so that I have more fuel to talk about how much I don't like it. To me, that's what hate watching is.
So you've gone in with the decision already made.
Again, 95%. I'm still, or 95% certain. Like, okay. I'm not going in hoping to hate it. I'm going in knowing that it's Korn. I'm not going to like this music,
but
I want to have listened to the whole Korn album.
Because the thing is, like, you know, doing what we do, there are movies that I feel like I should see, like Batman versus Superman, because there's a conversation being had about it, and we do a movie podcast, and so I feel like I should be part of it, or at least one half of us should be.
I feel like you're condemning me for not.
No, not at all. It's just movies. Some of us take this seriously. It's fine anyway. So, podcast is over. We're done, is what I mean to say, and it's all because of Batman versus Superman, David versus Tyler. That's what I want. No,
there are plenty of movies I see that you don't.
Name one. No, it's fine. It's one of those things where it's just like one or two of us, I feel like, should weigh in on a certain thing. And yes, sometimes you catch it. Sometimes I do. And when it comes to movies like Batman versus Superman,
it's usually
I'm the more mainstream person. I'm the more populist person in my tastes, I guess. I hate it, but that's who I am. And so I go in, but I wouldn't say, even though I assume I'm not going to like it, I'm willing to let those assumptions go while the movie is playing and acknowledge good things that are happening. And so I feel like that's not a hate watch. I feel like a hate watch is, if something is good, that will be ignored. If something is bad, I will focus on it and try to remember it so that I can talk about it later. Like
that's probably true, because the whole point is to have more fuel to talk shit about something.
Yeah, I think that's it.
And
like the conversation you want to be a part of is, let's hate this movie tremendously, and that's it.
Right. Whereas, but for me, it's not. You're right. It's not movies. I don't hate watch movies, and I don't. I think there are things that I hate read. I'm a long time subscriber to GQ magazine.
Okay.
And they have a...
I thought you liked GQ.
I do, but they have a food critic.
Oh, okay.
named Alan Richman, whom I can't stand.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see that there's a new Alan Richman article, I'm like, oh boy, let me dive into this. And so I do it with that. And apparently I do it with certain, like, new metal bands.
You know what? There is... Okay. I will hate watch Christian film. Because of the other podcast, I feel like There are some Christian films I need to watch. And so it's like, all right, I know I'm not going to like it. And so I just need to start coming up with arguments, but I can't do that unless I see the movie. So I guess I should see it. But at the same time, I've allowed myself to be pleasantly surprised. But even then, like, I do go into, you know, when I saw God's Not Dead 2, I'll be honest, my mind was pretty much made up. I will acknowledge it's better than the first one.
I want to ask Asterios what he hate watches, but I also want to say, in Alan Richman's defense, he did play himself on an episode of Treme, where the whole point was that everyone hates him and Kim Dickens threw a drink in his face. And I do give him credit for realizing, at least, that he's kind of a joke.
I have no respect for that. Here's why. For the same reason that Michael Moore went on The Simpsons and he is doing like a documentary, and then someone says, and he throws out a statistic that can't possibly be true. And someone's like, where did you hear that? And he goes, your mother. And he runs away. And it's like, hey, that's funny. It's about how none of his movies are factually accurate in any possible way. And so it's like, oh, he's being a good sport about himself. It's like, no, he's inoculating himself against further criticism by saying, like, hey, because I'm a good sport, so I'm going to keep doing exactly what I have been doing and make no change. If he actually was self-aware, he would say, hey, maybe I should do things better.
All right.
That's my thing.
Asterios, what do you hate consume? besides, I guess, rogue scenes from Spider-Man 3 on treadmills.
Yeah, it's just you. The stuff finds you. Like, that's the thing. Like, so, like Batman vs Superman. By the way, I was watching it over someone else's shoulder, and I still I didn't even go to the menu and go like, ah, Batman vs Superman. I was literally, I could follow everything about that movie. I don't really hate watch shit. I don't know. It's just, I don't have a lot of time to watch good stuff. Like, I still haven't seen season 2 of Daredevil. Season 1 of Daredevil was, I think, one of the best things I've seen.
Yeah.
I watched...
It might be my favorite Marvel thing, like, of the last
couple years. It's incredible! Yeah! I watched the first episode Friday night, and I watched the other 11 all day Saturday. I was just like, nah, this is really good. I want to see which beloved character gets murdered next to further fuel the Matt Murdock's rage. And but I still haven't seen Daredevil season 2, and I definitely want to see Elektra. I hear she's a hot Greek girl. Like, I still haven't seen this. I haven't seen season 2. I don't end up. And you know what? There's a lot of media that is about hate watching. Like there's a series that Red Letter Media does called Best of the Worst.
Yes.
By the way, in the interim between my last appearance, like, Red Letter Media has become a dominant force in film criticism.
Yeah, they're big.
Isn't that crazy? I don't even mean they're, like, big. It's like, because, like, fucking Larry the Cable Guy's big. It's like they invented a way to communicate film criticism through YouTube that has now been replicated ad nauseum.
Yeah.
You know, to a ridiculous degree.
I'd say them and Nostalgia Critic, Doug Walker out of Chicago, I feel like those two realize that, you know, you can't just sit in front of a screen and talk, which admittedly in the few videos I've done is exactly what I do, but whatever, it's fine. I have no expectation of being as big as they are, but, you know, incorporating like comedy and visual effects and sketches and that sort of thing. But in the midst of that, still having remarkably insightful film criticism, Nostalgia Critic, who sometimes I often don't agree with, but, he has a bit, not a bit, he's got like a 25-30 minute video about AI in which he talks about the various things that he doesn't like about it, and he winds up mirroring a lot of the stuff that I've been hearing ever since the movie came out. But then in the last 10 minutes he starts to turn and talk about how this is a perfect hybrid of Kubrick and Spielberg, and that maybe he needs to change his view on it. And so it's like, look at that. That's nuance. And you don't find that a lot in, you can find it all over the place in like online film criticism, but like YouTube film criticism, you don't find it very much.
No, it's either everything's the best or everything's the worst.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of how, because it's so quick to communicate that on YouTube, like just like this sucks and this rules and welcome to Sucks and Rules. Like it's just, you know, but did the Nostalgia Critic come before or after the angry Nintendo nerd?
Around the same time, I believe.
Okay.
Nostalgia Critic has been around for a while.
Yeah.
But I am aware of the angry Nintendo nerd, so yes.
We all need to be, I think it sounds like you guys got there before I did, and good for you, but I've recently been thinking we need to be at a point where we don't sound like journalists 10 years ago who were like dismissively talking about bloggers is like bloggers is like a lower form of writing. Like yeah. I have to make sure not to talk about YouTube critics as if they're somehow like maybe a lot of them are bad because it's the Wild West, but I can't like dismiss the medium.
Well, yeah. Well,
Red Letter Media is what we're talking about. Yeah, exactly. We all think that's great and that's YouTube criticism.
Okay.
But and it's,
I guess we think it's okay.
Well, I think the good ones realize that, well, I'm on YouTube. I could essentially turn this into a video essay.
Yeah.
And the good ones, and that's what Red Letter Media is known for primarily are these, you know, Mr. Plinkett reviews of Star Wars and Star Trek and that kind of thing. And while, you know, the very nature of the character reviewing it is he's basically like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, and the voice accompanies it. And there'll be a lot of like goofy, silly stuff in there, but it's also remarkably intelligent and insightful and witty, mixed in with incredibly dumb things as well. But even the dumb things are pretty smart. And so, but when you actually look at it, you realize like, oh, this thing about the Phantom Menace is a 90 minute video essay. And, you know, it's pretty great.
Now, Asterios, I want to go back to something you said, because we're talking about, it's been more than 3 years since you've been, almost 4 years since you've been on the show. We're talking about things that have changed over that time.
Yeah.
You also mentioned, in terms of Daredevil, that Elektra is a hot Greek chick.
Yeah, and I still haven't watched.
And you are of a Greek background. Have you seen the other franchise that has roared back into our lives in recent years?
Damn it.
Have you seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2?
Oh, gosh, no. I haven't even seen the first one.
Is that right?
And I didn't watch My Big Fat Greek Life, which was the sitcom
right.
that followed all those characters, too. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not. It's like, you would. Okay. Even if you. Here's the best pitch you're going to give me for watching that movie. It's surprisingly funny. Like, I don't know, maybe Robert Smigel did a draft, because every line is a punchline and they're all just, it's just full of really great jokes and it has a really great plot with an earned ending. I'd be like, but I don't.
David, can you make that pitch?
No, it comes together by the end, but it is not as good as the first one. And the first one itself is just, you know, it's a very, very solid and charming middlebrow entertainment. And this one doesn't even live up to that bar.
You know, here's the interesting thing. What's her name? What's the name of the star of that?
Nia Vardalos.
So Nia Vardalos.
By the way, super cute.
Yeah.
She's adorable.
I've always had a big crush.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting thing. It's like, all right, everybody watches my Big Fat Greek Wedding, and they think that the lesson that Hollywood takes is that people like Nia Vardalos. And it's like, no, that's not the lesson. People liked My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just take her and put her in something normal. It has to be something weird and personal for us to like. I feel like there's a lot of actors and actresses like that, where it's like, we only like you doing this one thing, and if you do it again, then you're ripping yourself off.
So Nia Vardalos is the Yahoo Serious of Greek-American yes! romantic comedies.
Exactly. That's exact. I'm trying to think of another.
I was going to say Roberto Benigni.
Oh, yeah,
yes, that's exactly right. People didn't like him. They liked Life is Beautiful. And so then they try to put Roberto Benigni like in a concentration camp as a clown. And like, wait, is that Life is Beautiful?
That is Life is Beautiful. But then he was in...
He was Pinocchio, the live-action Pinocchio,
right.
which I hated. I didn't see. But I'm the other way around, actually. I like Roberto Benigni when he's in Jim Jarmusch movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Down by Law and That on Earth. I don't like Life is Beautiful very much. Never did.
There you go.
But people, here's how much they responded to Life is Beautiful. Obviously, like, it was the only foreign film that made money, thus it will win Best Foreign Film. That's how the Oscars work.
Okay.
It also won, I think, Score... And Best Actor. He won Best Actor. That is astonishing to me.
Yeah.
That's a thing I forget, because how could it be true? Like, I'm pretty good with Oscar trivia. I could name Best Actor pretty far back. And then 98, I'm like, wait, who was that again? Oh, right. It was Roberto Benigni. But it's like, no, my brain refuses to remember it.
I like his Best Actor acceptance speech more than I like Life is Beautiful.
Oh, sure.
Because he does the thing where he's like, his English in terms of syntax and everything is not that great, but he actually has a decent vocabulary.
Yeah.
So him saying, I am in tumult, which is like a thing that most like native English speakers wouldn't describe themselves as being in tumult.
No, I don't think so.
But he like stumbled his way to it. I found it very, very charming. I'd watch his acceptance speech again before I'd watch Life is Beautiful again.
All right.
We're making short work of these coffee crisp things.
I love them.
This podcast has quickly turned into just an opportunity to eat coffee crisp on mic. What was the name of this guy again?
Jarrett.
We've Jarrett?
Said it a billion times.
I can't remember the name of every listener. I know Bob.
Bob, send us candy.
Bob, come on. Get with the program. I know that you...
Bobby boy.
I know you're busy with your own podcast, but come on. We've been around longer. So now that we've hit 500, I find myself having a bit of swagger in my step.
Nice.
Even though it somehow makes me more pathetic.
Yeah.
I think.
Yep.
But I did, you know what I mean? And then in class yesterday, I will say this. It's not often that I push more than one lesson at school.
For like, listeners who don't know, or guests who don't know, More Than One Lesson is Tyler's other podcast.
Oh, yes.
Which is film criticism from a Christian point of view.
That's true. And then I am also enrolled at UCLA in the master's program. And so as we had to go around and do like a, you know, a icebreaker kind of thing. We talk about, you know, what's your favorite movie of all time? Very simple. And then one of the instructors said Back to the Future. And I thought like, well, I had Tom Wilson on More Than One Lesson. So if he's that big of a fan... All right, so I happened to have some business cards with me, and so I said, okay, here's the deal. This is a Christian show. Keep that in mind. But I had Tom Wilson on, and his face, like, lit up. He was so excited, and I thought, like, oh, good. I'm able to – I hope he's not too disappointed by the fact that this is a completely overtly Christian discussion. But anyway.
Yeah. I have a lesson
to pitch you.
Okay. I'm sorry, only one?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm out.
Damn it!
I like more than one. If you can give me two.
It's a lesson in stages.
Okay, let's do it.
You need to do a lesson about every single time they raise up the protagonist literally like a Christ figure. Examples include the end of the Matrix sequels, where like they're literally carrying him out and his arms are outstretched.
Yeah.
So when Superman dies and they're like literally carrying it and his arms are out. It's like anytime like a character in a movie like makes their arms into a T.
Gandalf, yeah. When Gandalf falls in Fellowship of the Ring, right before he falls into like complete blackness, his arms are out.
Yep.
Yeah.
The end of Gran Torino.
Gran Torino, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he chooses to sacrifice himself rather than do the usual Clint Eastwood thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Spoilers for Gran Torino, but he gets blown away at the end, and then he's laying there on the sidewalk with his arms in the cross.
That's a very unnatural pose.
That's what I'm saying. It's just real goofy. It's super-duper obvious, and I feel like you should create, like, a super cut of all of them and be like... So I guess lesson one would be... Don't literally like turn your character into Jesus and then have him die like Jesus did and then have him make his arms look like Jesus because it's very, very surface.
Uh-huh. That's the thing, is that like I do feel and a lot of the movies that we talked about are movies that I like. I don't necessarily like the Matrix sequels, but the first one, the Christ analogy starts with that one. But there's one thing, there's a difference between just general Christ analogy.
I would say the Christ analogy completes in the first one. Like, he dies and comes back to life in the first one. Like,
that's true. And
it's
done. And he jumps into Agent Smith, right? He, like...
And explodes him.
So
just like when Jesus jumped into Pontius Pilate and exploded him.
Yeah.
I don't recall what translation that is, but that might be New Living
the
anyway.
Grant Morrison.
But you're absolutely right. It's surface when it's just like, all right, what can we do to add some depth that is not earned? Oh, I got it.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, well, this character's not that much of a Christ figure. Well, he's about to be, because when he dies, he's going to do this. And that's it. No, thank you.
Do you think that the filmmakers in this case actually think they're being subtle? Like, they think, like, later they're going to go, hey, do you guys notice something about the way that guy died? Like, do you think that they think that it's a clever
move? They might.
No, they absolutely might, because you can always count on these big budget movies we're talking about to completely underestimate their odds.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I want to get to the thing you actually,
my book.
Yeah. But, first I wanted to ask you, we've talked about all these movies you didn't see that you saw because there was nothing else going on and you were in the middle of traveling across the country.
Yep.
What was the last movie you went and paid to see in the movie theater? Yeah.
What a fucking good question that is. Holy balls. It wasn't as far back as the new Star Wars, which I loved.
I was going to ask you about that.
What happened this summer? Civil War.
Uh-huh.
What are the big movies recently? Like, what's a movie where you're like...
This hasn't been a very good summer.
No,
I think
the last movie I paid to see, not counting the Terrence Malick IMAX thing, was Miss Peregrine, the new Tim Burton movie.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
How's that?
It's good.
Okay. I liked
it. It's not great.
Yeah.
I would say, as much as I'm a fan of Samuel Jackson, he's off the mark, and I think he's the worst part of the movie.
But isn't Eva Green great?
Here's the difference, and I was thinking about this. This is one of those thinking in the shower moments where I went, this is why I don't like that. It's a very slight difference, but it makes all the difference here. Samuel L. Jackson is being hammy in the movie. Eva Green is being arch. And I yes. think it's a slight difference, but it's so important to the movie
yeah.
that that Samuel L. Jackson's performance actually manages to derail it during his scenes. And that's because he's such a big part of the third act. It was kind of a bummer for me.
Yeah.
I did like the movie. Anyway, that's not the question right here to talk
about. I found the movie.
Okay.
The Angry Birds movie.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not kidding. Movies I've seen this year include, I saw Ghostbusters. I liked the first half. I think it was better than people gave a shit for it. I saw the first 30 minutes of Star Trek Beyond on an airplane here, and I loved it. And I was like, actually, you know what? I think the way to watch Star Trek Beyond is on a TV.
Okay.
Because I think if I were in a theater and I saw that opening scene where it's like very comedy and then it turns out to be a visual joke, I think if I was in the theater, I'd be like, I paid a lot of money to see this. But I'm watching it on an airplane and I'm like, that's pretty funny. And you know what I like about this? That it's very normal Star Trek.
That's the thing that really strikes me most about that movie is that it just seems like a big budget long episode of Star Trek,
which is great,
which is really a neat idea.
The only Star Trek. I mean, I think the Star Trek, the Next Generation movie that works the best is the third one, which is just a long episode of Star Trek.
Which one is that? Insurrection?
Yeah. Insurrection. Yeah. It's just like, hey, you know what? Because I'm watching First Contact and I'm a kid and I'm like, there's a lot of murder happening. And this isn't why I like Star Trek. Like, I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, when Captain Picard like shoots that dying ensign who's being Borgified, I'm like, wait a minute, Captain Picard, they de-Borgified you. It took two episodes. And there's been multiple episodes about like your de-Borgification. Like, why are you just shooting this guy in the neck with your phaser? And you're like, and he's like, trust me, you'll be doing them a favor. And it's like, you know what would be a really big favor, Captain? And by the way, I'm not kidding. This isn't like a stand-up routine I've come up with in my 30s. Like, I'm 12 years old, and I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, what's happening? I don't like this. I don't know, stuff with the deflector dish, the temporal wake. I'm watching this movie, I'm like, you know what? This was better than Generations. Because Generations bored the shit out of me, and it had Lursa and Bator in it.
Now, you said that you didn't write this as a stand-up bit, but have you tried your deflector dish temporal wake chunk on stage? It's gone over.
It started out as a tweet, and I'm just building on it and building on it. You know, but I forget where we. Oh yeah, so I'm watching Star Trek Beyond, and it's like, all right, there's a scene where Bones literally turns to Captain Kirk and is like, it's your birthday, happy birthday. And I'm like, that would happen in a TV show. There would be an episode. It's like, this is the scene with the exposition in it. That's totally fine.
And I think I heard, I think Red Letter Media brought it up, that sequence of like, it's your birthday, let's have a drink or something like that is referenced to like one of the, like I think the fourth film or something yeah. like that. And it's been so long since I've seen that I didn't remember, but it's like stuff like that, which is, you know, as much as I do like Star Trek Into Darkness.
But
really, I thought you liked it last time.
No.
Maybe I liked it last time.
Did we talk about that last time?
I think so.
Yeah, no, long story short, it's like, but I saw this movie last time and I liked it.
It's very similar to the first one. I think I prefer the first one.
I much prefer the first one because it's like, in order to raise the stakes, they got to kill. It's like, if you got to kill Captain Pike to make me care, like that's so cheap. It's like, find a better way to make me give a shit.
And it seems to me that simply by having Khan be the villain and having somebody yell Khan, admittedly somebody different than yells it in Wrath of Khan, it's just like, okay, well, you're referencing stuff that everybody knows. But having, you know, happy birthday, let's have a drink. That's, first off, it's something that already works well for the story that you're telling. But it's also a nice deep cut for real fans. And it's like, that's how you do a reference. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. That absolutely worked. Or Captain Kirk eating an apple in both movies. It's like, there you go. You know what? Young Captain Kirk will probably just take a big bite out of an apple and just throw it on the ground because, like, I don't know, he's young and it's like he needs a thing to make himself different. And then, like, old Captain Kirk's eating a goddamn apple too. It's like, oh, okay, this guy likes apples. That's fine.
Let's talk about your book.
Okay, let's talk about it. I got a new book coming out.
through Devastator Press. It's called Toys for Cheap. It is a fake catalog of dangerous and insane toys. For example, Tickle Me Elmore Leonard. He says over 10 spare pithy phrases that evoke humanity's wars. So pretty much you just squeeze him on the hand and he just talks about how Get Shorty got taken away from him in editing.
I'm at the board games page. We've got Mall Sadness, Mystery Rider Date, and my favorite, Hungarian Hippos.
Yeah, and it says, in Soviet Russia, marbles eat hippos. And there's four giant marbles eating hippos. But then there's a footnote that says, please don't Google the accuracy of Hungary's involvement in the USSR. Also, another board game is John Candyland, the game that benefited most from the death of John Belushi. So you can play as Who's Harry Crumb. You can play as Mog from Spaceballs. There's all your favorite John Candy characters are there.
I enjoy. So here's, okay, as I'm looking through these, the name that pops up, and not as like a ripoff, but like as, and I don't know if you meant this or if you're inspired by this guy, like Jack Handy.
Oh my God, I love Jack Handy.
Like as I just read through, and just like those, and I know that he wasn't responsible for like all of the SNL like commercial parodies and stuff like that, but I'm a huge fan of those where it advertises a silly product, and as I look at Stretch the Truth Armstrong.
Oh, the only doll that lies on its resume?
Yeah. And then it says $7.95. It's like, all right, this is solid. I like it. I like the specificity of lies on his resume. And then in true like Jack Handy SNL fashion, it says, warning, does not stretch. that to me is like, that is the, what do you call that? At the bottom of like, of an advertisement.
The fine
disclaimer.
Print.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, disclaimer.
Disclaimer humor is like some of my favorite. Simpsons does it great. SNL does it great. And it's on here as well.
I like all the Nerf, except it's, I'm sorry, Norf.
Yes, I don't know what Nerf is.
Foam toys, which are all like weapons and methods of execution. And you've got the Norf guillotine, and the tagline of which is soft with their heads.
And there's a little.
Okay, let's not give away the whole book.
People no, give, honestly, give away the book. Who gives a shit? Talk about the book if you want. And again, you can get this book at devastatorpress.com/cheap. You can also find it on Amazon if you search for toys, the number four, the word cheap. We do have Amazon Prime delivery, 2-day delivery for free. Oh my God.
Nice.
So I'm looking at the spread that simply says it's a bunch of Urkel bullshit.
Yes.
And I'm laughing tremendously.
Well, I think our listeners will enjoy the Videodrome Viewmaster, which is a Viewmaster made of human flesh.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And, it just says, bottom just says, long live the new flesh, 1995.
Yeah, it's very funny and beautifully drawn.
Yes.
By Jimmy, how do you say his last name?
Jimmy Hasse.
Yeah, it's really delightful.
Yeah, Jimmy Hasse is he's the lead, the art director for The Onion. He's an incredible artist. It's a 56-page full-color graphic novel. It is bigger than my gigantic head. It's these huge, oversized pages because they wanted to make it as big as a catalog. And yeah, you can pick it up. I hope you guys like it.
Toys for Cheap, Devastator Press.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Star Wars, though.
Okay.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
I'd love to.
We do have to wrap up soon, but Tyler said he wanted to ask you about Star Wars because you, of course, are a big Star Wars-ophile.
Bigger than you guys.
Definitely.
I don't know why you got to get, you know, confrontational
not,
about
it. That
it's
not
just
like,
important that you know your place.
There's not like, like people who are into Star Trek are Trekkies or Trekkers.
Right.
On whom you ask.
Oh, we're Star Warriors.
Star Warriors?
Is that true?
No. We're just Star Wars fans. We're just huge fucking nerds.
But at this point, it's like, yeah, the name for Star Wars fans is everybody.
Yes.
Like everyone loves Star Wars now.
That's the thing about Star Wars. I remember one time Kurt Vile was talking to another favorite DJ of mine, Tom Sharpling, about Bosick and IG-88. And Kurt Vile is like an indie rocker from Philadelphia. Yeah. And Tom Sharpling's like, how do you know about IG-88? And he goes, it's Star Wars, man. It's America. And like, that's just the way it is. It's just, you know about it. It's so deep in our culture that like, it would be weird to say I don't like Star Wars. Uh-huh. It's like you could ignore Star Wars. You could not go see the movies. You could not read the books. But like, if you say like I hate Star Wars or I'm going out of my way not to see Star Wars, at this point you're trying to make some sort of cute point.
This is actually that. This reminds me of something our friend Jim Bruce over on the late Paul Goebel show. Paul Goebel's not dead, but his show is no longer on. And Jim Bruce talked about the idea of the royal family, and that if we as Americans say I don't care who the queen is, I don't care about all that, that's literally true. We just don't care. But if you're, you know, in Great Britain and you say I don't care about the royal family, you're making a stance. Making a point.
Yep.
And that's Star Wars, or maybe the NFL, or there are things like here in America where if you say I don't care about that, that's a statement.
Yeah,
and that's what Star Wars is.
It's like I think football is fine. Like if I'm in a bar and football's on, it's like I'll look at the game. Like if when people get super excited about football, I'm excited for them. Like my friends that play fantasy, like I'm like, you know what? That's cool. It's like I like Pokemon shit. You guys like this. They're both games about like managing large collections of characters in a way that's most beneficial to your team. Like there's no difference in my mind between Pokemon and fantasy football. They're both boys managing a bunch of stuff. You know, and it's like but if I were to be like, oh, I hate football. Oh, football's the worst. Oh, you like football? Oh, I hate football. I don't watch football. It's like, what's wrong with you?
You know, I'm not really a sports fan, and I'll make jokes about that. But when it comes right down to it, I wish I were a sports fan.
Absolutely.
Like, I look at people that enjoy sports, and I think like, and like right now, I mean, obviously it's a big time for the Cubs. And so like really?
How do we not see? This is how I know you don't know about sports.
What?
I'm from St. Louis.
Obviously, oh, that's right. Cubs, sorry.
I was literally like,
well, I'm used to Dodgers fans saying boo. And I was like, I don't think of him as a Dodgers fan. Like, that's what I'm currently thinking of right now. But
no, in St. Louis, you learn to hate the Cubs at the same time that you learn, you know, basic motor skills in the English language. But like, it's in my veins.
Here's how much I'm not a fan. Had the Cardinals won the World Series?
You asking, have they?
Yeah.
Yes, they've won the second most times of any Major League Baseball team.
Now, my feeling is, if you're a Cardinals fan and the Cubs are doing well, it's like, boo. It's like, they haven't won in a long time. Just let them win. Why do you have to shit on, like, the underdog? Why are you siding with Goliath against David?
Weird. Good point. Weird.
It's a respectful thing to know. I know in my bones that a Cubs fan would never be happy for me.
Why would they? You guys have won a bunch, you know?
No, I think,
you don't need it.
I think sports rivalries are a weird thing where they're, like, in deeply held and deeply felt, but also unless you're an asshole, they're not actually personal at the same time.
Good
friends with a Cubs fan, and there's a mutual understanding between us that I will never, ever, ever be happy for him that the Cubs win. We can still be good friends. I think that's the way it should be. There are assholes who take it too far
and whip batteries at people.
Well, that's just Philadelphia fans throwing batteries at.
I thought it was Boston as well.
The famous incident is that people in Philadelphia threw batteries at Santa Claus.
They sure did.
Yeah, that's it. Philadelphia definitely holds the in the nation's conscience. Battery whipping is synonymous with Philadelphia.
And so to go back to what I was saying, is that like there are things that everybody's into and I wish I could be into, not so that I can feel accepted or anything like that, but just because I look at how much fun they're having and I think like, that does look like fun. I just don't take much joy in the thing itself. I can go to a baseball game and enjoy myself but that's more just the general experience. And so, but almost invariably there are certain things and certain ways people will phrase something that I might not say it, but mentally I'll be like, don't be an asshole. It's usually that. And if somebody says, okay, if someone hasn't seen Star Wars, I'll be surprised, but it depends on how they say it. If they say, I actually haven't seen Star Wars,
Yeah, like, you're okay. Just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? No. You shut your mouth.
No, serious. I don't think you get what I'm saying.
No, I get it. Of course. Yeah. I mean, that's your first reaction.
No, it's like, oh, okay. Wow. That's interesting. I haven't seen Star Wars. But if somebody says like, I haven't seen Star Wars. I don't know if I'm going to.
You go, fuck you. I swear to God. Barry. You're pushing my last nerve, Barry! I'll slit your throat from ear to ear!
No, yeah, I mean, it's the normal reaction.
Yeah, exactly. This is what we were all thinking. We're all on the same page.
I appreciate the commitment, Asterios.
That's me!
What's interesting is that so many people really, I would say loved, just by and large loved, Force Awakens.
Yeah, because it was good.
But it's not even been a year, and it's starting to shift. Not like
hated. Because here's the thing, God, the fucking day after. I'm sorry. Do you curse in this podcast?
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Okay, good. The day after Force Awakens,
we also
came
constantly
out,
threatened to slip people's throats from ear to ear.
Yeah,
yeah.
So well, now, I mean, that's a callback.
But not
the day after, I got people telling me, you know, if I want to see the first movie again, I would just watch the first movie again. And you got to give George Lucas credit. People take a dump on the prequels all the time, but at least he's introducing new and interesting ideas as opposed to J.J. Abrams, who's simply giving us a movie we've already seen. And it's like, I heard that opinion right away.
Really?
Okay, wow.
Absolutely. Because there is another thing that has changed in the culture. And it's so funny. I've been on this show over a span of 7 or 8 years, and something else that has changed in the culture is hot takes have now become the norm.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
you have to have a hot take. You have to get those clicks. You are writing hot takes all the time that you might not even agree with. But if you're getting paid $40 to crap out this piece for a blog and a percentage of the clicks on it, then it's in your best interest to find the hottest take the fastest. And The Force Awakens, it's a great movie. It's kind of, I don't see how you could argue with it. Like, you can quibble with small parts, you can quibble with small parts or big parts or whatever, but it's like, all those actors are fantastic. And they play characters that I care about and that I want to see succeed, as opposed to the entire prequels,
yeah,
where I didn't care about any of the characters, and it made me care less about C-3PO, who I care a lot about. And yeah.
I also think that is the main complaint, that it's so similar to A New Hope, and it really is incredibly similar.
It's the same plot, but it's good though.
But here's the thing: it's because the prequels are so terrible.
Yep.
That we kind of needed this palate cleanser. We needed to get back. We needed to do the things that Star Wars was initially good at to remind us all, like, what Star Wars can be, and now we're excited going forward.
And the fact that it's followed up immediately by Rogue One, which is very much off the beaten path. Like, they're not going to do, like...
I'm very excited about
Rogue One. I'm really excited about Rogue One. Like, they didn't say... It's not like the next one is going to be the new version of Empire Strikes Back. This is a completely different type of thing. You know, it's a different... It's different iconography as far as planets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a, and it just literally one little line, which is many Bothans died to get us this information. And there's an assumption of like a whole story behind that.
Can I be a nerd here?
Please do.
Sure. A serious thing. You're thinking,
I was about to jump over the table.
Yeah. You're thinking of the second Death Star.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Bothans did not die in the Rogue One story.
But either way, like plans have been gotten and you kind of wonder like, how did that happen? That has to have been a bit of an issue. You can't just get Death Star plans, on the internet. And so, I don't know. They're answering a question that maybe people weren't asking, but maybe they should have been asking. And in that way, I'm very excited. I do think where it could get into trouble is I'm interested to see how much Darth Vader involvement there will be, because one thing about Rogue One is that it allows people to it allows them to shoehorn Darth Vader in again. And so I don't know, but I'm still excited because I also love Ben Mendelsohn as a villain.
I think I'm excited to see Darth Vader again, because I bet the first thing he's going to do is just kill three main characters.
Yeah.
The nice thing about the Darth Vader comics is that they make him scary again. Mm-hmm. They make him terrifying in the Darth Vader comics right away. And so I love the idea of introducing Darth Vader as like an act two obstacle that's like slaughters half your team. And then it's like, holy moly, are any of these guys going to survive? I haven't seen, I only watched one of the trailers once. Then I said to myself, like, I'm not going to watch the trailers. I want to be surprised.
Yeah.
But this is kind of funny. I'm trying to find this list on my phone. I'm having trouble because now, unfortunately, there are two Wikipedias, one Wikipedia that handles canon and one Wikipedia that handles legends. And so the legends Wikipedia, which is hopefully is at the bottom of this. Exactly. There we go. I've gone from canon to perfect. The amount of characters in the Star Wars extended universe that have had their hands in the Death Star plans is infinite. Mm-hmm. Are you guys familiar with this?
No, I don't. Yeah.
All right. So you know, the first Star Wars first-person shooter was called Rogue Agent, right? Rogue.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, Rogue Trooper.
I like movies, the series.
Yeah, no, movies are great. There are no video games. So, like, there's an entire Star Wars game that came out in the 90s. It's about you playing a guy named Cal Katarn, who's trying to get the Death Star plans. And then there are, like, comic books about the Death Star plans. And movie, and like, now they're making a movie about the Death Star plans. There are unlimited novels about the Death Star plans. Like, in previous continuity, the Death Star plans had been, like, stolen and smuggled by no less than 40 characters. It was really cool. And they flushed it all down Disney's golden toilet. I'm fine with that.
You're
flush
okay
the
with
whole,
that?
Oh, God. Flush the whole extended universe. Because the thing is, the best-selling graphic novels of all time all happen outside of continuity. Mm-hmm. Watchmen happened outside of continuity until recently, which is a problem. Because DC ran out of ideas and started incorporating Watchmen into their continuity. The Dark Knight Returns doesn't happen in continuity. Superman Red Son doesn't happen in continuity.
Right.
Whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow. Like, all of DC's best-selling graphic novels do not happen in continuity. So, it's like, well, when something doesn't happen in continuity, who gives a shit? Like, it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you're upset that something got taken out of continuity, examine your brain. Like, what's wrong with your brain that you need it to be right and that you're not allowed to like anything that didn't happen? Because none of this happened. Absolutely none of this happened. So, who, like, but no, but this really didn't happen. Why do you care so much?
Yeah, you can decide for yourself. Like, I'm a big fan of Buffy and Angel.
Yeah.
And both of those shows have continued on
in the comics.
In continuity. With Buffy, I'm kind of fine with that. With Angel comics, the very existence of the Angel comics defies what I think happened at the end of the series. So, those Angel comics...
All right, where he becomes friends with the dragon.
Yeah, so the Angel comics to me are not... They're not my continuity.
Well, and my, but you have the freedom to...
That's
it's not on TV, so you have the freedom to ignore it.
Yeah, or read it and enjoy it on its own, but still say, when I watch the season 5, episode 22, Not Fade Away... to know, no, that's how it ended. And they all died in that alley. That's how I feel.
Okay. So do you think Angel died fighting that dragon?
He died fighting one of the 10,000 demons that was coming after him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I feel. That's how I think.
Guess I don't need to watch Angel now.
Yeah, you do. You do.
I know.
All right. This has been fantastic.
Yeah. I could listen to you yell again at Terry all day long.
Terry!
it was,
son of a biscuit!
It was Barry. You can't go retconning.
Oh, Barry. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No,
Terry's his brother, who's actually really into Star Wars.
So, as usual, of course, you can find us at BattleshipPretension.com, where you can find reviews. I think Tyler reviewed Star Wars Force Awakens back in the day, way back a year ago. You can find us at, what did I say? Battleship Retention. That's where this is. That's where all of our episodes are. All of our reviews. We're on Twitter at Davey Pretension and Tyler Pretension. Tyler, your other podcast, as mentioned earlier, is More Than One Lesson.
That's right.
Anything you want to plug this week?
We're in the midst of Halloween times, and so this week's episode, unfortunately, there are some audio issues where my mic was a little bit off, but you can still hear me okay. It's just not ideal. Josh and I talk about The Shallows with the companion film The Descent.
My other podcast is on hiatus, so I got nothing going on right now, but I will be bringing back Hey Watch This. Probably at this point, I'm thinking, I thought I was going to take a shorter break, but it's probably going to be maybe in the new year. I'll probably bring Hey Watch This back, because right now I'm so swamped with fall movie fever and trying to catch up on all the fall movies. So
if you want, you can join me and Jen for Worth Playing For.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
Asterios, where can people find you? Where can people find your book again? And what's going on?
Absolutely. You can find my book at devastatorpress.com/cheap or by going to Amazon and searching for toys, the number four and the word cheap. Again, Amazon, we got free prime shipping. And you can learn more about me by going to my website, AsteriosKokinos.com. That is AsteriosKokinos. I'm at Twitter at Twitter.com/Asterios. Thank you guys for having me. I'll see you in 4 years.
Yeah, thanks for coming across the country just to be on the show.
Come on. And only this show.
Yep. It's a write-off.
And thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.